ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I have the angry soccer coach, a.k.a. Kyle Wilson. If you follow him on Instagram, it's Kyle Wilson Official. Now, this man is not very well liked because he is disrupting soccer clubs all over the country and holding their feet to the fire, even if they don't want it, because he's arming parents with the right information. I'm not going to dive too much into what he does, but I will say, go look him up. Go watch his reels on Instagram. Go watch his short videos, his posts. Read them. Go take his course. It's phenomenal. I can't force you to do anything, but as a parent with a young kid, actually two young kids that are playing soccer, I always forget my daughter, and the reason why is because she's in the perfect place for her. My son, as of right now, he's in a great place, but that's the thing. He's giving you the blueprint to find that perfect place for your player. Doesn't mean it's guaranteed to last or if it's truly the right place, but he's laying out the footwork for what you need to do to make the right decisions. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
I am Kyle Wilson, Kyle C. Wilson, official angry soccer guy, as I'm known by most people in this country at this point. I don't have every single answer, but I went through the entire system as a USU soccer player. I finished it from the day I entered at recreational to the day I graduated at 18 years old. Been through the entire thing, played at every single level. So I played at the DA, Development Academy, when it came out, did 2 years of it. Then went to college, played Division II college down in Florida. After that, I went to play semi-professionally, which means I was paid to play. I was making 300 to 400 euros a month, which was peanuts, but they gave me transportation, housing, and food. And that was in France. I was actually right outside Saint-Étienne. And then after that, I finished my career at that point, and I got called up to the Futsal World Cup, and I participated in the 2019 AMF Futsal World Cup in Misiones, Argentina, representing the United States men's national team, which was probably the greatest playing experience of my life, just playing for your country. I don't think you could replicate that if you've never experienced it. It's just a different level. Then I got into coaching. I started with two-year-olds so I could learn how to deal with children, so understand patients, understand their needs, understand what they have to go through. I did that for probably a year and a half, and I got into a club, so been doing it for almost 10 years now. August will be my 10th year coaching in grassroots. I've done everything from 2 years old up to adults. I've trained professional players, one of them that's won the Champions League, the Premier League, and the European Championship of Portugal, named Luis Nani. I've trained probably about 20 professionals at this point. A lot of guys that have played for Orlando City or in MLS or in other countries as well. And I've even trained the generational talent coming out of Brazil named Calman Basil, who's a 2012 worth $3.5 million with Nike. So I don't have every single answer. I never will, but I just have my perception of my ideas that I've experienced, especially in grassroots. And that's what I'm really trying to help.
So with your background, is this why you decided to be, quote, the angry soccer guy? I call you more frustrated with the system. Took me a long time to come along to that process of figuring out who you are. And then, I mean, everything clicked for me. So is this why growing up through the system and now coaching it, is this why you're now putting out all the videos you're doing and all the advice you're giving to the general public?
So it's very interesting because I run my own organization. I've been doing it now for 4 years, my own club, and we have the leadership team. There's one guy that nobody knows, nobody sees him. And they always ask, hey, Kyle, you ready to cash cow the hell out of this thing? And I'm like, and I'll provide context for what that means. When I say the word cash cow, I'm talking about you provide no more value to the public. You're just trying to maximally monetize the audience that you have. In this case, be parents. And the way that you would maximally monetize, in my opinion, would be you go get as many of those badge leagues, acronym leagues, as possible. So your MLS Next, your ECNLs, your EAs, your EALs, your NALs, your USYS Pros, your whatever leagues that promote exposure. And I've always said, no, I don't want any of those leagues. What I'm finding is you don't have to do any of the groundwork. You don't actually have to develop any kid because as long as you have the leagues, parents will flock to your organization. The amount of stuff that I've seen just from a general marketing standpoint, when you say, I have MLS Next, I have ECNL, I have EAL, I have EA or whatever league, parents will flock to that because they think their kid has to play in it. They don't for a variety of reasons, but one of the best pathways that I found is when you get a kid around 50 years old, you put them to play against grown men and play in like an adult league. So not talking like a Sunday league, but I'm talking like an affiliated adult league. So there's ones like UPSL, USSL. What I have found is when you take kids and you put them against adults, you're preparing them better for life. There's a kid that I've worked with since he was 11 years old. He's now going to college this next season. And I just did a training session with him the other day. And he's like, man, Kyle, I wish I listened to you. I wish I played more adults when I was younger. And I was like, I told you, but you wanted to go play the badges. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to college now and I'm not prepared for this. And I'm like, I know, I told you. So long story short, I feel like I have a moral responsibility to try and fix this. So I think that's why people call me angry. And I put out a lot of content because I was very frustrated. One of my first videos, maybe the third or fourth one, it might have been the one that you saw where I was talking about the cash cow. And like, this thing is a cash cow. And everybody was telling me that I don't know what I'm talking about. And I'm like, okay, wait till the more content comes out. I think I probably did come across as angry at the time because I was angry. I was pissed. I'm like, look at all this stuff that's happening. It's just about money. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that it can't be about money, but it's about the value that people are bringing back to their participants. One of the things that I put together, it's called the Youth Soccer Value Calculator. You can actually break down the actual cost per hour that you're spending for your child. In a lot of places, it's babysitting. I don't mean that disrespectfully. Just understand what you're getting into. And then what I've added is called considerations and bonuses. This is where you can determine if you're getting value on your child's training. in terms of the number of games they're playing and the training processes they have, it'll blow your mind when you go through it. Basically, if you're in the plus, you're getting value. If you're at a zero, you're breaking even. And if you're at a negative, you're losing money every single year. So it allows you to determine where you're at from those considerations and bonuses. So you can actually break down, like, is my child gaining value or am I gaining value? I think that's huge. I've had quite a few tell me that they found a lot of success. And one guy tell me, he's like, dude, I had no idea how much in the hole I was until I did it. I was like, I'm glad you figured it out now and not waiting 10 years and be like, dude, I just spent $200,000 on my kid to play soccer and he got nowhere. It's just a mess, bro. The last thing I'll add is I've talked to a lot of college coaches and they're going international, which means they're going to recruit international players. So something's not right in the youth system when our own college system, which should be about our own players, is going international. The reason for that is, they're telling me, is they're getting more prepared players with more experience. They're ready for the college game and they can make an impact from the start. That's just a concern, like red flag. If our own college system, which should be mostly domestic players, are international players. And the reason is they have a job, they have a mortgage, they have a family, they need to feed them, they don't want to lose their job. So they're going to try and get the best players they possibly can, which in most cases is international. It's like last example, we played against UCF a year ago. It wasn't my organization, but I had 8 players go play. The entire starting 11 of the men's squad at UCF is international. There was not one American kid. Everybody's from Germany, Spain, England, Brazil, you pick. Like their starting goalkeeper, just for comparison's sake, was on the Getafe B squad, one of the top 5 clubs in La Liga. How is an American kid ever going to compete with that?
They can't.
It's almost impossible. And my opinion is, I watched the kid play. This guy should probably be a pro. The problem is he's 6 foot. He's not 6'3", 6'4". But his range of passing was ridiculous. He was able to hit 65, 70-yard balls on a dime. He probably didn't pass the eye test. That's why you can't compare him. The best way to do it, in my opinion, go adult, get the experience. If you kill it, you crush it.
That's the conversation here with FC Dallas. Their academy used to be their bread and butter. Yep. They used to bring kids up all the time. And the last phase of coaching for the last 3 years, he hasn't been bringing kids up from the academy through their homegrown program into the MLS. And because he's going with well-established players, it cut a halt on the academy. The players are still there. The talent is still there. The 15-year-olds are not playing against 20-year-olds anymore. They're playing against other 15-year-olds that are below their skill level. And that's the problem.
So I talked to a guy. He's the assistant coach of a pro MLS squad. I can't give his name or the team. I talked to him a month and a half ago. He sent me a message on Instagram. He said, hey, I need to talk to you. So he calls me. We're talking. And he's like, hey, everything you're saying is so true. He's like, I have a 6-year-old. Everything you've talked about is literally happening to my son. And I'm like, okay. And we started talking about MLS. And I was like, yo, do you think players are coming through? And he's like, at our club, there's nobody good enough to make the jump from the academy to the first team. They're missing X, they're missing Y, they're missing Z. And I'm going, wow. Then I talked to another guy, celebrities. When I first started posting my content, you probably heard of it or seen him. I'll give you his name off air. He reached out to me when I first started posting. He's like, hey, I need your help. And I'm like, you need my help? You're a freaking celebrity, bro. What are you talking about? And he's like, hey, I got some kids I'm trying to move out. And I'm like, I see you're super connected with an MLS club. You're holding the MLS Cup trophy. You're with the ownership group. Send them to the academy. And he's like, they don't want the kids. I'm like, what do you mean? This was about a year and a half ago. And he's like, they want to go sign a kid from South America for €1 million or $1 million or $1 million, whatever, and pay him $3 to $4 million. So they put $5 million into him and they sell him for $20 to $30 million. That's their business model. He literally told me they're forced to have the academy because that's what MLS says. And the only reason they have the academy is to protect the asset of the kids. So that way, if Real Madrid came for one or Man City for somebody like that, then they can protect the asset of the kids.
That's what's happened here in Dallas is that they've sold out most of their young players. And now they have no skill, no young talent coming into the first team. You mentioned the colleges talking about not finding the players. I recently talked to a coach from Utah. I interviewed him and Tim Summers. He was telling me that we don't practice the true FA model here. From U10, U11 and younger, training to train. From U12 to U15, it's training to develop. And U16 and older, it's training to win. And I know you touched about this in one of your clips that you've posted. Do you find that parents are just chasing the marketing that's out there, or do you find that they're truly chasing development?
I can only talk from my experience, stuff that I've seen, the parents that I've dealt with, conversations that I've had. I've talked 500 to 1,000 parents at this point just about this exact topic. The overwhelming majority don't know what they're talking about, which is okay, but they're uneducated and don't know what's actually important from a development standpoint. I think the bigger piece is everybody wants to win, which is fine, but nobody wants to earn the right to win. So when I go out and watch games, you'll see teams kicking, booting, sending, smashing, clearing the ball forward. Like people say, oh, you're not watching MLS Next. I've even gone out and watched MLS Next games. And I'm seeing kids smash it. There are some teams that are trying to play from the back and progressively build the ball and whatnot and play through the thirds and whatever verbiage you want to use to describe it. But the point is, parents want to win. I can share some exit interviews that I've had from my own organization. The overwhelming majority is one of three things. They don't feel like their kids appreciated enough because we tell them the truth. And I'll say, hey, your kid's not good enough. So we had a parent come in. Her child was younger, or their child is two parents. And they're like, oh, we don't feel like you value our kid. And I'm like, well, why do you say that? They're like, oh, when we go to this person who's a trainer, they tell us how great he is. I said, I'm willing to tell you the truth. He's clearly trying to, whoever it is, trying to take your money and just say whatever we need to get you to come. I'm like, we'll sit here and tell you the truth. You want your kid to play at this level? He needs X, Y, and Z. Would he get that? He can play. No, we don't appreciate that. You don't have to appreciate it. I'm just willing to tell you the truth when other people won't because they just want your money. I've had exit interviews with parents and they're like, oh, why are you leaving? They said, oh, we don't win enough. Yeah, but have you seen how well your kids develop? Yeah, but that doesn't matter. My son wants to win and I want to win. We want to win too, but we don't sacrifice how we want to play. And that's why I said earn the right to win to just win the game. Win at all costs. Win at all costs, which is booting, kicking, sending, screaming, smashing. You pick your poison how you want to get it there. But we actually try and teach kids.
You hit on a couple of things. I'm looking at the U.S. women's and U.S. men's national team. The women's team has been successful for decades, and these players coming up now don't understand the sacrifice players before them had to go through to be where they're at today. It's just my perspective. I don't have a soccer background. It's just watching and listening to interviews, the entitlement of players. They tied in some game, and then they're celebrating like they won. You should be walking off the field with your upset that you draw, not one. And to me, a draw is just as bad as losing. At least when you're in those brackets from the national level, that's what it is. You're there to win, not to tie. And I think that's what it is. Everyone feels like they're entitled to a win. I have a 10-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter. My son, I think, is above average. I'm biased. I'm his parent. But the only reason why I feel like I'm okay to say that, it's that he's able to play up. And it's not because he's riding the bench. He started for a year, playing a whole year up as a starter. That tells me he can hold his ground playing up. They went from a crummy team last fall to winning their division this spring in pre-ECNL. And it's another alphabet league, which makes I don't care about because the best teams are in that league. They went from being bottom of the table to top of the table within a year. True development was going on.
Cool.
The coach knew how to train players. It's finding the right fit for your player. This has been my argument from day one. It's finding the right fit for your player. And even though he was on a winning team, a very successful team for the last 6 months, we realized it wasn't the best fit for our player for development. And that's the thing. I think parents confuse winning and development very easily. And I feel as a parent, true development is more important than the winning. And is the team growing? Is my player getting better? And I don't think parents look at that. All they see at the end of the day. Now, being a club owner, do you have parents that say your record was 500 last year, or do they see how talented your players are at the end of the day?
Nobody's brought up the record, but they'll bring up stuff like, we literally just had an exit interview. This actually happens. We went to a tournament called the Easter International Cup. We took our 2014s. Hard tournament, right? One of the best 2014s in the state of Florida. In our bracket, the two teams that made it to the gold bracket final were in our bracket. One team was from Costa Rica. They won the whole thing. Another team was a tournament team where they just go collect the best kids, put them together, and put them on a field and play. So it was like three kids from here, three kids from there. So those two teams made it to the gold bracket final. We finished the tournament, and I'm sitting down with the parents because, of course, when they lose, they request to be. Every time we lose a tournament, I am guaranteed to have at least one parent send a message to either me or one of our partners and say, hey, we need to have a conversation on Monday or Tuesday after the tournament. And we're sitting there, we're talking, and they're like, hey, we're unhappy because they literally said to us, when we go to tournaments, we play to win. Parents want to win. I'm like, yeah, we want to win too. But they were upset because this is actually a crazy story. Our normal goalkeeper at the time, I texted the parents 2 days before, hey, are you guys coming to the tournament? They said, no. 2 days before Eastern National Cup. Because they hadn't, I hadn't heard from them, they haven't committed, whatever. And I'm like, okay, let me find out. So I sent a message, hey, you guys are coming. Because they followed up before, they said yes, now they say no. I'm like, sprint tournament. Luckily, I had just gotten another goalkeeper, maybe 2 weeks before. Ask him, hey, can you play? Yes, he'll step in. So at the time, the kid, the new kid isn't as, we're talking about 9-year-olds. So I'm not worried about it. I put out a tweet and I posted on my Instagram. I said, hey, I couldn't give a shit if I win the Eastern Africa Cup. I want to see if we can play against the big boys and compete. If we win, great. If we don't win, they're 9 years old. The parent was pissed off because the goalie came to the final game, the kid that declined the tournament, the parents declined it. They came to the final game, didn't talk to me, didn't tell me he was coming. I just see him walk in his building. I'm like, what are you doing here? So my parents brought me. I'm like, yeah, no shit. Thanks for telling me. I'd even played him the first half because parents declined the tournament. They don't communicate with anybody. So those parents that requested the meeting said he should have played. And I'm like, no, he shouldn't have because he declined the tournament, didn't pay for the tournament, and he showed up without communicating to anybody. That's why he didn't play until the second half. And they're like, oh, that's not right. And that's when they said, oh, when we go to tournaments, we parents want to win. I said, I want to win too. But I'm not sacrificing my beliefs because you guys just want to win a tournament or win or whatever the process is. And we talk with parents. We love what you've done for our kid, but we want to win more. Is roughly the conversations we have. Because I look at it from a standpoint of, I'm not preparing your kid to win on Saturday. I'm preparing your kid to win at lights. And I'm not saying that kids have to lose, but I think lose, and it's actually interesting. One of our coaches said this quote, and I don't remember exactly how he said it, so I'm paraphrasing it, but he said, you'll never appreciate the real value of winning if you never lose. And I'm like, yeah, you have to lose to understand what it means to win. I just think that's so important. But I do have a question for you because it's been sticking in my mind since the beginning. You said that you didn't really enjoy my content at first. You felt I was frustrated, but then something clicked and you switched. So what was it about the content that you didn't like?
I felt like you were going for an angle of being angry. It doesn't seem right to me. And then recently, I watch all your videos, even though I was struggling, because everyone raves about you. I've watched you for months now and gone back and watched everything. And you started to talk about the tryout season. And this is something that I'm very frustrated with because it is the worst time of any player's life. And it's even 10 times worse for the parents because they're the ones that have to make a decision. You talked about, you went through your percentages. Don't be a 5%er, be a 0.1%er. He's not angry. He wants to change it because he's frustrated of all the BS that's out there. And he wants to make a positive impact. He'll make all of his money through Instagram. He doesn't have to make money through coaching. I don't know if you are making money through Instagram, but that was my train of thought, was putting out these videos. That's where he's going to make his revenue. And so he can truly focus on what really matters is the development. And me as a parent, like, there it is. If he puts enough content out there, he can actually be a positive influence. It may come across as angry. I realized it wasn't anger. It was true frustration. And true frustration comes out as anger. That's his angle. You're sick and tired of the model that you were having here in the United States, and you want to have a positive impact. And you're just laying, you don't hold back. And I took that as not being genuine. I thought it was trying to put up a front. And as I've watched, the frustration has became less. I've felt from the beginning to now. And now it is truly, forget everything. I don't care. This is my reputation. I'm going to do it my way. And if I make the national stage, awesome. Maybe I'll make more changes across the country. And that's how I took it. And I feel like that's what's missing. That's why when I'm trying to come up with a name for this episode, it was, I feel like it's the voice of reason that's missing in the United States. There's too many coaches there. My favorite quote is from Jeff Ginn, and he runs North Texas. I don't know if you know who he is. He runs Northern Utah United. And he goes, coaches are the best well-intended liars. And he said this in a a soccer coach symposium.
It really made me think.
And I actually brought him on. I ended up talking about his club and this quote for a little bit. But I always reference back to his episode that he did, something performance. I can give it to you later if you want it. But that really hit me. I started to listen to all these coaches as the best well-intended liars. My son has played for some high-quality coaches. I sit across from my son's coaches now and listening to them talk to me and listening to what they have to say. Is this a well-intended lie or is this them being honest? And it changed my perspective. And then when I do my evaluation of a coach, I do listen to other parents that have dealt with them. But sometimes it's good to talk to a ref that's refed one of their matches, because you don't always get to see everything, but the refs hear everything the coach says. I've had some refs that I've met now that has coached that have been officials during matches, and that has swayed my opinion more than parents. And which is funny because I'm the one that rides the referee on the sideline as a parent. I don't care if you miss a handball. I'll yell handball, but I'm not there to be mad about it because they're human and it's angles, a game of angles. That is how I view this all. But I will ride them if I think up if it was an over-aggressive tackle or if it's mostly that. It's safety of players. That's what I care about. Because if it starts to escalate, you have to start reeling it back in and you have to start calling the ticky-tack stuff to bring the game back to being playable. And as a parent, that's what I get more upset about. I'll even yell enough. I don't call it on my own son. At the end of the day, it's about keeping the player safe. I know what my player is capable of, and if I think he went in too hard, I'm like, you have to call it. You'll learn not to do it anymore. And as a parent, that's how I view all this. It is trying to change my perspective because I grew up, I have a 10-year-old child that's obsessed with this beautiful game. And when I was going through this process of leaving his first club and no longer coaching and trying to find what's best for him, the idea went off for this podcast, which is to help better educate parents. And me being the least educated person, and then you hear, I can't think what the coach's name from the EPL says, yes, Sir Alex Ferguson.
Sir Alex Ferguson
said, I only know 1% of the game. And it made me feel like if he only knows 1% of the game, he know 1/1,000,000th of the game, then, and I have a lot to learn still as a parent. It's a learning curve. It's listening to what you are passionate about and trying to understand what you're trying to do at the end of the day. And I think parents perceive it as angry. I realize it's true, utter frustration with the system that's built here. And you talked about the cash cow. And I think parents don't realize that. Why should it cost a family $25,000 for the kid to go play on a travel team in the United States, especially here in Texas, when we have some of the top teams in the country in our backyard, or we go to a tournament in Vegas and you're playing five of the 10 teams you might play are from DFW. It doesn't make any sense to me. And so as a parent,
you know why they don't want to play each other, right?
They'll lose players to each other.
We have an issue in Orlando. All the clubs don't want to play each other because, and that's why they have to go to Miami. They go to Tampa because if they play anybody local here, then they're going to go nuts because they're going to be losing players left, right, and center to each other. It's just all a game within each other. So it's crazy. I do want to, you know, pick on three things. You said that I monetize the platform. I have made maybe $100 from Instagram. I was able to start monetizing again a month ago. For some reason, they took off the bonuses. Now I'm starting to do that. I finally got YouTube to give me access to monetize that platform. That happened 2 days ago. I literally haven't made any money from any of this content. I want people to understand that. The reason why I even started posting was because I started doing some research. I'm like, there's nobody talking about all this BS that's happening. So I was like, okay, I'll be the voice of reason. I'll put my reputation out there. And I've literally said, like, I'll be the guy to fix the thing. If I'm the guy that changes it, great. Or if I get the crack, cool. I did the math. I put out almost at this point 85,000 hours. There's so much stuff that parents can go look at for free that they don't have to pay a dollar for. So, example, I put a course together that's called the 3% Parent Blueprint. I have a completely free version that is 17 classes that they can go take today for free. And it's crazy. I sat down with my mom and dad, took them through it, and I said, hey, wouldn't this have helped you tremendously? And they said, this would have been game-changing. For us, my parents were like, your background, they didn't play sports. So I grew up in an unathletic background. And so I've had to learn all this stuff intrinsically on my own. But the key thing happened was I got lucky. We found a coach when I was 6 or 7 years old. And he's still my coach. If I hadn't found him, I would not be here today because I learned from him and I learned from people around him that were even in better positions than him. I'm very good friends. He's like a dad to me at this point. He was the technical director at Olympique Lyonnais in France. One of the biggest clubs in France. When I first met him, they were the best club in France. So I talked to him at least once a week. Me and him bounce ideas back and forth all the time. So I've had people like that in my corner that I've been able to learn from. I felt a compelling moral responsibility to produce content for free for parents to learn so they stop getting ripped off and they can actually take control of themselves. I do have a paid course through the same thing, but I made one free so that way if people didn't have the money, they could take it for free. There's no excuses. And then I made a paid one that if, like, most people don't value free, right? Like, people don't want free, they want to pay for something. And I learned that through a camp, which I'll talk about later. So I of course, paid and free, it's the same course. The difference is the paid one, you actually see the presentations, you get PDFs, downloads, all this extra stuff, whereas the free one, you just get to hear the content. So that's the difference between the two. But I wanted to make one where there's no excuse, you could take it and learn, which is on YouTube, you can go through it right now and watch it for free, or you can pay, I think it's like $70 for the actual course. Maybe it's 80, I don't remember. So it's not even $100 that you're paying for to actually get the entire process that my parents wish they had because they didn't know squatting. And I'm actually going to get one of my parents, probably both of them, to do a video explaining, like, hey, I wish we had this, would have changed our lives. It's crazy. Everybody that's taking it, they're like, dude, this is game changing. I'm like, I know. More parents just have to take it so they can understand what they're getting into. So I felt like I could have stepped into this platform and really built a reputation and said, hey, I'm here to help people. And to be honest, I just started monetizing my platforms outside of ad revenue or monetization from Instagram. I started this course. It's a diploma series. I'm going to have two levels of it. So there's level one and level two. So it'll be a 1% for parents. Those will be courses that they can buy to level up. And then on July 5th, I'm actually making the announcement for a coach one. Same idea, 3%, 1%. It's called the 3% Coach Blueprint, 1% Coach Blueprint. Same thing on the parent side. The reason why I did that was because I've done all the way up to the C license of US Soccer. I took the D license at the end of 2017, entering 2018. And I walked down to the D license going, I will never touch a US Soccer license again. I was that upset about it because I think the course was like $700 or $800 plus travel, food, hotel, because you have to spend a weekend wherever. And I'm like, I maybe got $100 of value out of it. I'm like, it was a waste of time completely. I didn't need to take this. So I just finished the C license in December. That was $1,700 plus travel, food, hotel. So all in, we're talking 26, 28. And I'm going, maybe $1,000 worth of value. Maybe that's me being generous. And people think that it's the instructors. It's not the instructors. It's the content. It's what they're being told to teach. Even some of the instructors goes, I wouldn't use this, but I have to because the soccer says we have to teach. Long story short, I never had a mentor that taught me how to coach. Like, I had my coach that taught me how to play, and I took ideas and was able to build my own philosophy from it. But there's nobody teaching how to actually coach kids that don't want to be there. Or like what I call grassroots. Kids that don't want to be there, parents that just drop their kids off, that practice two times a week. They don't train outside of practice. How do you deal with pay-to-play? How do you deal with parents? I've had three parents come up to me and tell me, Kyle, F you, right? Like, how do you deal with stuff like that? How do you deal with having a team app and parents don't commit to practice and you show up to practice, you're supposed to have 12 and you have six. Your practice plan's going like this, you're ripping it up and throwing it away, and you got to come up with something on the fly. All of these little thought processes that nobody teaches you in US soccer licensing because they want to ignore the fact that it's pay to play and that you're going to get 1/8 of the field versus a half a field. Like, every single class that I've taken says you need to have half a field. I don't know about you in Texas, there's nobody getting half a field in Florida unless we have an indoor facility that are all five-a-side fields. That's what we typically train on, is a five-a-side field, which is like 40 feet by 50 feet. So we're talking, what is that, like 20 yards yep. by 25s, right? Give or take, we're talking about. So it's tiny. That's what we train on typically. So I put this course together and it took me 8.5 years to build it because I didn't have any mentorship. Nobody taught me. What I first did was I replicated with our staff. I said, hey, everybody's going to take this. And they're like, hey, this helps a lot. And then I got to a point 4 months ago where I felt comfortable enough to give it to friends of mine that own clubs and, dude, this is unbelievable. And I'm like, okay. You're telling me this is unbelievable. This means that there's a missing piece for the market. So I've had probably 30 people take it at this point. And they're like, dude, this is the best thing. It blows US soccer out of the water. I'll send you some of the screenshots that I have from people telling me about it. They're like, 10 out of 10, you need to be a guy running coaching education for grassroots. And I'm like, I agree. I should be the guy that's sitting there fixing grassroots. It won't ever happen, I don't think, because US soccer is so focused on 77-99. Everything should be no more than 5v5s. But my big focus is 1v1 to 3v3. Anything that I do with my kids that are under 99 is 90% of the time. Very rarely do we go above 5v5. And if we do, it's literally to prepare for a game on Saturday. I spend 20 minutes looking at corner kicks or positions on the field just to make sure that they have some idea of what they're doing. And it's funny because parents always come to me and be like, I think you need to work on this. I'm like, until your kids can all dribble, pass, they can play 1v1, and they can receive the ball with both feet, I'm not touching anything else. There's just no reason, in my opinion, to do so. And these are the type of kids that I get, which is fine. But it's just nobody wants to address the issue of grassroots. And that's where I feel like I'm able to come in. So on July 5th, I'm going to be making an announcement for coaches for a self-paced virtual course that they can take and learn 10 years of my experience. And I actually, and this is one of the biggest things I think that US soccer should have learned from is, and I even talked to an instructor. I invited him on my podcast. And I said, hey, come on my podcast. Let's have a face-to-face conversation because he comes to Florida all the time. He didn't even answer it, but he was willing to respond to the questions that I was asking him. And I'm like, the biggest problem that I have with US soccer is a couple of things, but probably the biggest one is we have to pass your course, but you don't teach us how to actually coach or what you expect a C-licensed coach to look like or a D-licensed coach to look like. I told this guy, I was like, look, you should have 3 full sessions. Whatever you want it to be is your decision as US soccer, but you should have, for example, attacking session, defending session, and a transition session. Just as a quick example. And then you should have, the philosophy should be, this is what your C coach looks like. This is what your D coach looks like. So like I did the C license. I still don't know what the C license coach is supposed to look like from US soccer. No idea. But I had to pass their stuff. I had to do my own film, my own stuff, send it to them. They give me feedback. Okay, but like, what do you want me to look like? So in my course, I give an entire session that I ran using my philosophy of no more than 3v3. The whole thing that I teach, I give it the whole thing. There's clear audio, good video. And so people are like, dude, this really helps. And I'm like, I know. I wish that we got this from US. But they're never going to do that because I think they don't know what they should look like, those ranges. So I could go on all day about this stuff. But July 5th is when my announcement comes out, or I actually announce the course officially to the public. And I'll send you some screenshots of people taking it, but every single one has been 10 out of 10. There's been 1 9 out of 10.
The thing with the coaching side of things, I think, how to describe it? Because I take my grassroots coach courses, and I was getting ready to take my D course, and I lost my team. Yeah. And that's a whole other story. And it blows my mind. I learned a lot about soccer because I didn't have a soccer background, but I think I learned more about the philosophy that US wanted versus what's actually out there. When I talk to coaches now, I ask a bunch of questions. Like my favorite question to ask a coach when I'm interviewing them and talking, figuring out if my son's going to be a good match for them is, what's your philosophy? Do you teach roles or do you teach positions? And I feel like it's setting myself up to have my answer because one teaches total football. One just teaches you run this line. And to me, it's a mindset. And there's so, like you said, when you talked about, I'm going to go back to one of your things, I think it was one of your first videos, you talked about how we need to change the level of play. It needs to be 4v4, 5v5 for this long, and 77-99. I cringe when I hear a bunch of 12-year-olds are then go start playing 11v11. And I ask why. They don't make the 9v9 fields big enough for them to play on. I'm like, but that's the whole point. If they're too big, and they don't learn how to move the ball in tight places. And if it's too big, it's no longer a challenge. It's not teaching them to be better soccer players because those in the 9v9, you probably can tell me these numbers better than I can. But I remember looking it up for a 9v9 match. I think a player might touch the ball maybe 30, maybe 40 times. And when you go to 11v11, they're lucky to touch the ball 10 times, 15 times a match. And it's the longer we spend in the smaller side games, the better off we are. We're one of the few countries that don't play 5v5 at the youth level. We go straight into 7v7. I'm like, why? It just blows my mind. And that's where you had me hooked, as I didn't agree with the time frame, but I understood it. And the more I have learned as a parent, I see why you want them there even longer. And yeah, but we're backwards here. It's all 1v1s. I talked to a coach and they were talking about how they do it in English Premier League. They don't get points if they score goals. They get points if they do their 1-2 correctly or if they do their overlap. Even if it failed, they still get a point for their overlap, not putting the ball in the net. And I think that's where we're failing. We're so focused on, can we run up the score by 10 or 15? And we're winning. And it,
yep.
Right.
Like it's parents.
And we're over there, it's completely backwards. And it's like, how do we train parents if you want your kid to go to college? That's not how you get them there. It's frustrating. Yeah. It's maddening. And going to your courses, I think the 1%, the 3% and the 1% courses would be helpful. And for coaches, I think coaches lose focus. I think a lot of coaches go into it with the right idea. And then all of a sudden it becomes a job and they have to provide. And the only way to provide is by putting teams in crappy brackets. We have several leagues here and our little pyramid, and they put them in the bottom bracket, and it's a lot of rec teams, and they just dominate and they win. Yeah, and then they go play in the next level up and they just get crushed. And parents, I don't understand why. And I'm like, so you're playing against kids that are training once a week or twice a week and at a very low level. And when you lose to those teams, you should be embarrassed. If they aren't moving the ball, you're doing something wrong. So
there's a bunch of things that go into that. Again, I think parents just want to win, so they equate development to winning. And I had a conversation with a parent. We went to a tournament. It wasn't my team, it was another. They went to the tournament. It was a Halloween tournament. And first game, they win 3-2. Everybody's happy. Second game, they lose 3-2. They blame the refs.
Okay.
We go to the third game. They get walled up 9-1 from one of these teams that shouldn't have been in the division. So then I get two messages from parents. Hey, we want to talk on Monday. I'm like, cool, let's talk on Monday. Talking to them, they're like, yeah, we're upset we lost this team 9-1. And he's going on about how the training's not good enough and these issues that happen. Can I ask you a question? I was like, how about the first game? He's like, oh no, happy, we won. Okay, what about the second game? He's like, oh no, the ref blew it. It was his fault. Okay. Get to the third game. No, it's you guys, you suck. That's what he's basically saying. Training's not good enough, philosophy's not good enough. You should be working on X, you should be working on Y. I said, okay, let me ask you a question. He's like, I said, looking at the team we lost to 9-1. How far away from the level are we? I was like, you'd think a week, 6 weeks, 6 months. He's like, oh, a year. Okay, you think a year. So don't you think we should lose that team probably every single time if we're a year away in gap and level? Yes. I'm like, okay, so what are you upset about? He's like, oh, we want to win, so that's why I want you to do these different things in training. I said, okay, but you just told me we're a year away from this team, which means we have a whole process to get to the level, right? He's like, yes. Okay, so this is why we're working on these things. But he didn't want to understand it because he was so upset that they lost 9-1. So then I said, okay, cool. How about this? You should be more upset that this team decided to drop their bracket and go from, say, the gold bracket to the silver bracket versus getting pissed at me and the club because we put them at their appropriate level. He still ignored that and just wanted to keep talking about the whole winning and losing thing. And then I'll give you one last example you'll find hysterical. We had a 2013 team. They go to a tournament 5-5. They win the whole thing. Parents happy as hell. Oh my God, crazy happy. They go to another 5-5 3 weeks later. They get smashed because they, like most tournaments that are like 5-5s, they have one bracket. They don't have like gold, silver, bronze. So the first one they went to, it was all bronze teams. They won. They're happy. Cool. They go to the next one. There's a mix. It's like three gold teams, a bronze team, and a silver team. So I think they won 1 out of 4. We had a meeting with three parents. We want to talk to you guys. We're like, okay, we should have been talking to them. And they're like, we're very upset. We want to leave the club. Okay. What happened? The tournament was terrible. Kids didn't know their positions. They didn't know where to be on the field. I said, okay, hold on. What about the tournament 3 weeks? Oh, no, that was awesome. Why? We won. Okay. So I'm like, what's the issue with this tournament? Oh, we didn't win. The kids didn't know their positions. We got smashed. I said, okay, hold on. Let's break this down. So you're telling me that you're happy when they won, right? Yes. And you're telling me you're not happy when you lose, right? Yes. So you do understand that kids have to win and lose. And they're like, oh, it wasn't the appropriate teams. You guys should know better. I said, we can't control who goes to a tournament. We can't control what bracket they're in. I said, this tournament, unfortunately, didn't have brackets. There's nothing that we could really do about it. But again, they were just so focused on the wins and loss thing versus watching their kids play and improve. Everybody just wants to, long story short. So it's just like, people don't want to understand and don't want to get it and don't want to focus on the bigger picture. And it's just about the win. It's just, I could go on all day, bro, about that. But
and I don't get that. I actually ask the coach what the record is, and I really do care because I feel like there is a time and place. And my view has been slightly shifted, you could say. And the reasoning why was I always believed a team should have a 500 record. And the reasoning why, because they need to learn how to lose and they need to learn. Because you don't learn anything if you're winning all the time. Yep. And if you're losing all the time, your players just are demoralized. And there's every time we join a team, we write off the first 6 months. I don't care. The first 6 months, we write it off. Like, unless it's a truly established team.
Yep.
And if it's not an established team, the first 6 months, you write off. The coach has to have time with those players to ingrain in them what he believes is the right principles and philosophies on the pitch. And that's exactly what we did. And everyone's like, why? I go, you're spending all this money. I go, it's a new team. No one knows each other. No one knows the coach. No one knows the philosophy. So they all have to learn how to be in sync with each other. And that's something that doesn't happen overnight. But at the same time, if they're winning every single game, they're either in the wrong bracket or they're in the wrong league, whatever it may be for turn across the board. So we are very extremely happy with a even keel record. It could be 400. It could be 600. But we know that they're in the right places. And
close to the middle.
At the end of the day, that's what matters. They can't grow if they're playing against weaker teams. And they can't grow if they're just being dominated and never touch the ball. If they can learn to play the game and they're in the middle, we're happy as a family. And I feel like my player has benefited from that because he has been able to experience that. My daughter, on the other hand, they all know how to play the field, but the teams they play against are playing cluster ball. And there's nothing they can do because they're playing their positions, their roles on the field. It's fun watching them because if the right wing, because they play a diamond 4v4, if the right wing goes up, the left wing knows to drop back and the whoever's playing defender moves to the right wing position. It's like this whole little shift. And they're 5 years old, 6 years old and gets it. But you have my son who's 10. Their team does not understand someone has to drop back when the wing runs up or the center back runs up the field. And it's comical because the coaches at the younger age get it. And the kids at the older age are lost. And it's like, where did the coaching go wrong in between these coaches? But I realize it's philosophies and everything else.
I'll give you this as a context. I worked for a cash cow when I first got into coaching. They had 1,500 to 2,000 kids, recreational and competitive. So it's not the big cash cow, but it was a cash cow, right? They wanted money. And I got a position eventually as an age group coordinator, which meant I wasn't just a coach at this point. I'm now responsible for age groups. And I'm now a part of their weekly higher up meetings. And every single meeting wasn't about, and this is years ago, by the way, but wasn't about what can we do to develop, how can we position the kids, how can, whatever. It's, these age groups are behind in revenue. We need more kids in these brackets. How can we find more kids? The three key things every single time, every single meeting was, your 9 is ahead, your 10 is below, your 11 is ahead, your 12 is below, we're missing 10 kids per thing, we're expecting this much revenue. It's not about the kids and their progress. It's about getting money through the door that meets the revenue standard. And what happens then is, you then have to go as an age group coordinator and go to your coach and say, hey, I need you to go find more kids. I need you to go find more kids. I need you to go find more kids. But I need more kids because I'm being told we need more kids. So when you're in a position where you don't want to lose your job, you forget what's necessary. You go do to survive your job because if you don't, you're going to get fired. So those things happen all the time. I don't think parents understand that. And imagine like bigger ones. I got a friend of mine, very good friend. He works for an organization that has 13,000 kids in their program, in their club. And he's one of the directors there. He just feeds me stuff all the time that's happening. He's like, there's no curriculum. There's no philosophy from the club. Like when he first got the job there, he asked, hey, can you guys send over like curriculum or philosophy? He's like, the head director of coaching was like, we're working on it. We'll send it to you when it's ready. What about the previous one? They're just there to pocket as much money as possible because they're a cash cow, which is fine. But people just need to understand where they get into
it. Right, and I think that's what's missing, is parents not truly understand, because most parents don't have, here in Texas, most parents don't have a soccer background. Most of them have a American football or baseball. Yeah. And it's completely different idea and different thing going on. And I think parents need to truly understand that there is a big picture and everything's a business. And it's when you find those coaches that view it, yes, this isn't my livelihood, but at the same time, it's about your player. And it's okay if you think you're going to be finding a better team, go. And if you don't, we'll welcome you back with open arms, because at the end of the day, it's about your kid and not my wallet. And I think I've run across a lot more coaches that lately than I, or DOCs that I've talked to that are not, I've not interviewed, but I've made friends with or have friendships with, and they have had that mentality. And it makes me realize, okay, these big clubs are the issues. It's these small independent ones. And as I've talked to several coaches, it's how do we gobble up these smaller clubs that are being successful? Because if we take them away, that's just more coaches in my team. And I think the best analogy I have is that every club shouldn't have more than three teams per age group.
And the reason,
and the reasoning why is because once you get to that fourth team, the quality of coach or the quality of players won't develop your player. And I found that very fascinating as a parent, hearing that from a coach. And he goes, you have your filling team that fills your competitive team and your development competitive team. And you have a rec level team that you're trying to push players into that. It's because every player might have a different role in each squad that they're in. And it really blew my mind thinking about this. So you're an all-star player, you're a star player in your competitive team, on your developing teammate might just be a support player because that's all they can handle. And then your support player might be an all-star in the development competitive team. And I just like, it started to click as a parent. It's like, it's truly so important to have that, be able to bounce and have players help in certain areas. And
I want to add two things to that. Again, I think this more helps us for people that will ever listen to this. I think what could happen is US soccer could place rules. Because there's no rules. It's an open West market. You can do anything and everything whenever you want, which this won't happen, by the way, because there's too much money involved being paid to US soccer to not allow it to happen. But point is, if US soccer came out and said, okay, you're only allowed three teams, to your point, three teams per age group or whatever circumstances, and said, these are the rules that everybody has to follow if you want to be affiliated at a US soccer, then you can start seeing incremental change. But then second problem, which I'm sure you saw the posts about the FIFA president coming out saying pay to play needs to end. Okay. So I've had probably 100 people send, and everybody's like, oh, what do you think? And I've said, he's only telling you half the truth, but he's not telling you what would actually happen or be required to happen for that to actually take place. And so most people don't know this or understand this. MLS is safeguarded by FIFA to be the only league in the country to be the top division. Nobody can touch it. They're proofed in. They're locked in. And this happened around 94, 95 when they were creating a league because all the other leagues failed. So I understood the theory of why they did this. But what happens now is because they've been safeguarding them for so long, nobody can touch them. And that's why we don't have promotion or relegation. If we think about it this way, for pay to play to end, in my opinion, there has to be promotion or relegation across all channels. You talked about England, right? You have the Premier League, the Championship, League One, League Two, non-league. So that's Division Five, then not whatever the other divisions are, all the way down to 12, I think. You can take a team from Division 12 and eventually get them to the Premier League. There's an incentive to have things cheap and free, or closer to it. Whereas here, the buy-in for an MLS franchise is able of $300 million. If you and me want to go start an MLS franchise in North Dakota, we're going to have to spend at least on the franchise $300 million. If we have promotion or relegation, we get relegated first year, we've just lost our entire investment. So that's never going to happen. That would be bad business. You're not going to get any investor that owns an MLS franchise right now to ever agree to promotion or relegation. It just will never happen. So for pay to play to end, something would have to happen between FIFA, US Soccer, and MLS. And I don't even know how this would ever happen, because how are you going to give these guys their money back? Like, I think San Diego just paid $500 million for the franchise. That's half a billion. How are you going to get them their money back?
Only way I could think of it, you have promotion and relegation, but it's more like the NFL where they share the profit. So whatever leagues you have within your pyramid, they all share profit in some form. The lower tiers get less money because their bills shouldn't be as much, because they shouldn't be paying as much as the top teams. Like how the English Premier works or Liga One, all those leagues over there, when you're at the top, you can pay the top salaries. And as you go down, but the profits would have to be shared. So these owners do not lose their shirt at the end of the day. And that's the only way to fix the problem here in the United States. But then you can have promotion and relegation, but it's not as big of a hit to the owners of the clubs. And that way that it's, I call it a communist viewpoint of soccer being created. I can't think of any other way of calling it. It is everything shared, all the cost structures shared. And the only way to get ahead is if you're at the top and you can actually spend the money, because you're bringing in more money than what you're being given from the league. And I think that's the only way to fix it here in the United States. But that's my opinion, just because I don't know how you would fix it, because you're right. No club owner wants to give up $1 billion. I got the evaluation of Inter Miami now. It's what, a $2 billion evaluation, $4 billion evaluation now. And they just 2 years ago, they were 300 million. And yeah.
Could you imagine if they got relegated?
It would
right now with Messi. Impossible.
And that's the thing, I don't think. I mean, there's no way of fixing the problem.
Yeah. And I hear what you're saying. It's possible it could work, but I'm sitting here thinking, like, I run a business, right? So I wouldn't want to lose my money. So good luck selling me on agreeing to those type of terms. Like, it just won't happen. And then the other two that I'm very concerned with MLS, and I'm sure you've seen this stuff, is there's three ways I can go about this, or I want to talk about these three things, at least I should say. First one is, you know, I'm sure you've seen the MLS grant system, right? You heard about that. The grants. Bullshit. That's a publicity stunt. At least my opinion is bullshit. So if MLS wanted to do the right thing, they would allow training compensation for every single organization. So what happens is that only goes to MLS academies. Oh, I'm sorry, MLS Next programs. I think they're called Elite Academies. MLS Next Elite Academies. And that means, like, my organization does not have MLS Next. I will never have MLS Next because I don't even want it. But I can't send a player to Orlando City and get a fee from them in the future if I send them to the academy, for example, and they become a first team player. I don't get that money. It doesn't come to me. And I've put five or six kids in the last 3 years to Orlando City Academy. I'm not getting a kickback for that. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is if they wanted to do the right thing, they could just open training compensation for everybody. So that way I could then say, you know what? I produce this player to a certain degree, and then I'm going to send him to Orlando City or whatever club, and he becomes a professional. I get a percentage of it when he signs internationally. What? So this, to me, this is a publicity stunt to say, hey, look, we're trying to give back to other people. But then I've read the articles that have come out, and they're all saying, oh, this money's going to go back to the underprivileged kids, which is fantastic. What about the people that are also paying you? So those fees aren't going to change. Yeah, you might go get one or two kids from underprivileged. That's awesome. I love that. Like, I have an underprivileged program too where the kids don't pay anything. But like, what about the people that are paying you thousands of dollars a year to play? You're not going to help them? Right? So that's the first thing. Second thing is, this is completely bonkers.
Yes, I'm sure you know about the protected about that a few list, years right? Ago.
Okay, so that is the biggest crony thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Like, I'm okay with them protecting kids in the academy. But how are you going to protect kids that are only in your territory that don't even play for you, that you've never had? Like, that's blocked kids from, like, personal example. There's a kid that left Orlando City Academy a couple years ago. He came to us. FC Cincinnati wanted to take him up for a trial, but they found out he was on the protected list. Couldn't take it. You guys released him from the academy. He should be free to do whatever he wants.
And that list is secret.
Right? It's just common sense.
The list is secret. No one knows who's on it.
Yeah, nobody knows about it. Yeah, the only MLS clubs know about it. Then you go into, this is crazy. I'm training a professional player right now. He just became a free agent. His rights, so he's, let me rephrase that. He's not owned by any club. Nobody owns him. He's free. However, there's one MLS club that still owns his rights because he's a homegrown to them. They're asking for $300,000 plus an international roster spot for him, even though he doesn't play for them. Because he's on their homegrown protection.
Yeah, no, or whatever. I forget the exact
word. He's a homegrown status. Yeah, so even though he's not signed, he played for them 3 years ago. So if any club wants to touch him that's MLS, they have to pay this homegrown status. And the club can set whatever fee they want. They've already set it, $300,000 plus an international roster spot. I'm like, what the are we talking about? And then it gets worse. This is where it gets even worse. Marco Reus, who plays for Borussia Dortmund, or did? Okay, so I don't know if you saw this one. Charlotte FC discovered him. How did Charlotte discover him? He's been a professional player for 15 years. So they discovered him. He said no. I think it was either LAFC or LA Galaxy just bought his discovery rights. So one of them now own his rights to try and sign it. He could still say no. That means somebody else would have to pay to buy his discovery rights. And he could still say no. So this whole thing is nuts. So like my personal opinion, I am so against what MLS is creating and stood for. And when this is my personal opinion. What I think is going to happen is they have MLS Next Pro, MLS Next, and I don't know if you've heard about this, but they created MLS Go, which is a recreational sign. I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to condense and squeeze like this, where they're going to try and kill all the other leagues in the country at some point, or at least in the main markets that they're targeted, and they're going to try and squeeze it this way to make it all MLS. I think that would be the worst move in the entire country if that ever happened, because they have clearly shown it's not about the players, it's about the money, which is fine. Everybody wants to make money. But you still have to have the interest of the players. Like, they're clearly purposely screwing players over for the protection of money.
That's the thing I'm most blown by. We recently had a player here, Julian Ivestone. I don't know if you know the name. He went somewhere in Boston to go play. But he graduated a year early, was part of MLS Next. And he never signed any contract or anything because he was wanting to go to college. Kept his amateur status. And then he went off to college and played in college. And that I think that was his way of getting out of all that, because everything expired. He went off to college and now they can't really grab him. He played a year in college. And as soon as that year time frame was up, instantly he went over to Europe and go play. I don't know any of the details in the background, but he's a goalkeeper and he's a phenomenal goalkeeper. But at the end of the day, I think they were trying to find a way out of the system without having to be part of the system, I guess is the best way of putting it. Because by going to college, it pulls him out of the all the pool, from my understanding. And so he went to college for a year and got picked up. And now he's playing over in, I think he got picked up by an English Premier League or a Champions League team. And now he's over in Europe getting ready to play next season. And then FC Dallas got nothing out of it, and which was bad and good at the same time. But it was in the best interest for him.
Sure.
And
that's why I think I mentioned earlier, that's why they created all the MLS academies are free now, because Orlando City used to not be free. You used to pay for the academy. But then MLS was smart. They said, hey, let's make it training compensation so that way they can make it free and they can protect the assets, because what was happening was there was clubs from Europe coming to take American kids. Not a lot, but it happened a couple of times. So whenever clubs were picking up players, and now they have to pay for them. So the interest in American kids has gone down because they now have to pay for these kids, whereas before they were getting them for free.
To wrap this all up now, I'm going to ask you my favorite question. Who has been your greatest influence as a player? And who has been your greatest influence as a coach? It's a two-part question. It can be whoever you want it to be. I've had some great answers over the years. Yes. So who has been your greatest influence as a player growing up and playing, and who has been your greatest influence now as a coach?
It's the same person. It's the same guy I mentioned earlier. So his name is Paul Gend. He lives in Washington, D.C., or in that area, the DMV area. So he's the guy that taught me 90% of what I know to this day. And that's what I was saying. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here today. So I wouldn't be preaching the stuff that I talk about. I wouldn't be doing the stuff that I talk about. I wouldn't have trained the players that I've trained if I didn't have his influence. So that's why I always make the recommendation to parents. You have to find a coach who cares and knows how to develop. Otherwise, you set yourself up for failure. But then as well, think people get this fear of FOMO, right? Like fear of missing out. And a parent will quickly burn a bridge. A kid can be happy, parent will burn the bridge. I think parents have to be very careful. I made an entire video that was like 20 minutes, 30 minutes of, if you want to leave a coach that you've been with for a number of years, so let's say two or more, here's how you do it. And it's my perception of how I would want somebody to do it with me. So, like, I've had kids, and these bridges are burned. Like, I'll never help the parents because of the... And I feel bad saying that, but it's like, you made decisions to act in a certain way that, for me, go against how you should behave as an adult. And when you make those decisions, it's over. Like, you've broken that type of trust. So, like, example would be, like, this was a year ago, we had a parent decide to pull the kid out, didn't want to communicate to anybody. I've developed him over 4 years. I took him from nothing and built him up to a player to be a certain level. I'm not going to go into too much detail. You'll probably know what I'm talking about, but it's just like, you can leave. Be open and honest about what you want to do. And transparency is key. So like example I give is, okay, let's say you've been with me for 3 years, 4 years. Take me out to lunch. Sit down with me and say, hey, we appreciate everything you've ever done. If it wasn't for you, my son would not be, or my daughter would be in this position today. We're making a decision to move them on for X, Y, and Z. You probably won't understand or won't agree. That's fine. But we're making this decision because we feel it's in their best interest. And like, give a gift. Hey, here's a $50 gift card. Like, you need to make this person feel special because I've been a coach for a long time, bro. Like, I've helped a lot of kids do things that, like, you'd be like, you did, this kid went from that to this. And I've had parents burn that bridge. And it's like, those parents I will never help again, ever help again. For the kid, I might do something, but if the parent came and asked me, I would never do it again. And it's like, sometimes I feel like parents don't value the work that especially a coach has done for their kids. And I'll say this as well. Parents will be the reason that I decide to quit coaching. So I've been contemplating it for 2 years now. I'm going to do one more season, like one more year. But this will probably be my last year of actually coaching just because of how parents behave, act, and manage themselves in the way that they interact. So I think that's important for people to understand here because I don't think that there's a lot of guys like me that want to do the right thing. And we're only going to be in the game so long until we get burned too much.
Hey everyone, as we wrap up this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch, I can't thank Kyle enough for coming on. Him and I have had some great texts over the last 5 to 6 months, because that's how old this episode is, was recorded in. And what he shared and what he shares on his social media, I'll reemphasize once again, is critical for all parents to hear. Doesn't mean you have to agree with it wholeheartedly or 100%, but give him a chance. His 3%, 1% program that he has for tryout seasons is phenomenal. If you take the time to listen to it, you better arm yourself for things that might come up. And if you're like me that likes to do a lot of research and deep diving into information, he has a plethora of information, videos, captions on his social media posts. Take the time to read them. Yes, he may sound angry. I promise you, I truly believe he's just frustrated, just like the rest of his parents. What's different is he has no skin in the game. He's a coach that loves kids to progress and develop. And at the end of the day, that's what we all want. If you're looking more information on him, go find his social media. I'll put as much as I can in the show notes for him. But once again, do your homework on this man. He's great. He has so much information out there and opinions that it will blow your mind how much he nails things on the head. Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.